Okay, good morning, members. I'm going to call Human Services Finance Policy Committee to order. And the first item is to take the roll. Ms. Hansen, can you please take the roll?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Lead Albright.
Good morning, present.
Good morning. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Good morning. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Representative Keel.
Present.
Oh, good morning. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Knorr. Representative Novotny. Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Good morning. Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher. And I see you, Representative Novotny.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we have a quorum. Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Let's see. Representative Robbins, would you like to move the minutes from March 2nd?
So move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Robbins moves the minutes from March 2nd. Is there any discussion or corrections? Seeing none, please unmute yourself. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the minutes from March 2nd, 2021 are approved. Okay, members, we are getting to be very busy in this committee, so we are going to try to hear as many bills today at 10:30 to noon as possible. If we do not finish our bills, we will recess and come back at 6 o'clock. So my goal is to get through the first three bills, House File 980, 1436, and 1435. If we have additional time, we'll then start 1305. If we do not, we'll finish 1305, 1559, and 601 when we reconvene at 6 o'clock tonight. I don't want to rush things. Some of these are very big bills, and so I want to give everyone a chance to ask a question or two and hear from testifiers. So that's going to be where we start today. So I really appreciate members giving up their evening to hear some of these really important pieces of legislation. So the first bill we have before us is House File 980. These bills, the first three, we're going to be dealing with child support or child custody issues. The first bill was already heard in Judiciary, I believe. But I'm going to move Representative Jamie Becker-Finn's bill, House File 980, to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. So we have the bill before us. Representative Becker-Finn, welcome back to the committee. It looks like you have an A2 amendment. Would you like us to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would appreciate that.
Do you want to just briefly describe it quickly?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment just updates some dates so that that DHS can actually make the changes that we're outlining in this bill, and then also puts a timeline on when parents need to share information regarding daycare changes.
Okay, so it looks like it's updates some dates. Thank you for that. Any questions on the A2? Okay, this will be a voice vote, so please unmute yourself. All those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment to House File 980, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the A2 is adopted. Representative Becker-Finn, to your bill, please describe it for us.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House File 980 represents many years of work towards modernizing Minnesota's child support statutes. Like most legislation, it's not perfect, but it is a bill that moves things forward and will improve the lives of many Minnesota families. Most of the provisions come from the consensus reached by the majority of the members of the Child Support Guidelines Task Force, which was formed back in 2016. Both Representative Scott and Senator Kiffmeyer served on that task force, and I am happy to have their support for this bill. Representative Scott is a co-author, and Senator Kiffmeyer is carrying this bill in the Senate. With that, I will turn over to my testifiers to walk through the bill. This is a bill that came with many years of work from many folks from the counties and DHS, and as well as families impacted by these statutes. It's a bit dense, so I do thank you for your patience.
Thank you, members. We will try to focus on the sections of the bill that have to do with our human services, our jurisdiction, and our research staff will help us with identifying those sections. So, let's see, the first testifier I have is Melissa Rosso. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name and members. My name is Melissa Rosso. I am the assistant Ramsey County attorney and the director of the Human Services Legal Division in the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, which includes child support. As Representative Becker Finn stated, in 2016, the Minnesota legislature established a child support guidelines task force to advise the commissioner of the Department of Human Services about updating the guidelines to meet the needs of the children of Minnesota and the changing dynamics of families. The task force was comprised of parent members, legislators, court staff, child support professionals, attorneys, and tribal support professionals. There was a report that was issued to the legislature on October 31st, 2019, and the majority had voted for recommendations that some of which are contained in the bill before you today. Amy Anderson will be walking through some of those provisions in just a minute. But just to state, there was a similar bill last year that was stopped due to COVID-19 and needing to refocus. And the background document that you all should have received contains information that talks about the negotiations that occurred in 2020 and so far in 2021. My office is very supportive of this bill due to the much needed changes in our child support guidelines. They have not had a lot of change since they were, since we started using them back in 2007. And as you all probably realize, a lot of things have changed since 2007. So thank you for considering this bill. Before I ask Amy to walk through, I just wanted to point out another provision in the bill, which is the Consumer Credit Protection Reporting piece. This is found in Section 10. Last year, the legislature updated the statute to accurately reflect that consumer credit reporting agencies cannot accept reports from states reflecting payments that are being made towards arrears once the state has reported those arrears to the agencies. Because these positive payments can't be reported, it's important for county child support offices to have some flexibility as to whether and when to report. And it would be very good for child support obligors to have an opportunity to work with the child support offices to enter into a payment agreement to prevent the reporting in the first place, again, since the positive reporting cannot be done. So that is the changes relating to that piece. With that, I appreciate your attention and consideration of this bill, and it's my pleasure to have Amy Anderson walk through some of those details.
Thank you, Ms. Rosso, and sorry for mispronouncing your last name.
My apologies. Okay.
So Amy Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your walkthrough of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Amy Anderson. I am also an assistant Ramsey County attorney, and I've been doing child support for 26 years there. I'm also a CPA and have a small tax practice. I am testifying about this bill today because I was involved in creating the new guideline table that is part of the bill. As Ms. Rosso indicated, this is something that the legislature knew had to happen. I've been looking at hundreds of cases over the years and see that the percentage of gross income that goes to child support is too high for people with lower incomes. Because of that, it's difficult to get an appropriate child support order for people in that income range. It's even harder for low-income families that have multiple children, because the table goes up to 75% of their income at some income levels for child support. A study done in Orange County, California years ago came out that with the finding that support is more collectible when it's under 19% of a person's gross income for one child and up to 29% for three children or more. Our current table has numbers that are over 25% for one child and up to 48% for three children and up to 75% for six. Most of us in child support recognize the importance of setting an order that is within the obligor's ability to pay. Obligor is the person who's paying the support. If the order is set at the right size, most obligors will have the ability to pay regularly and consistently. That is better for both of the parents, and it's what we hope to achieve with this new proposed table. The table itself came about through the task force. We had an economist that came in and gave us a number of potential tables. The tables that she gave us, everyone knew that you needed a low-income adjustment because those figures were still up over 25%. The task force struggled with how to figure this out. And being a number person that I am, I said, I could do this. I can write this table for you to make it, and it makes sense. So they asked me to give it a shot. In the current table's low income, that adjustment goes up to $2,000. In the table that I have created, it goes up to $6,000. And it's never more than 16.5% for one child. The task force, as the task force table that they created, I have further updated it to cover the changes in the federal poverty guideline that have occurred since 2018 when it was drafted. There are a number of other issues in the task force bill, or that in the bill that came from the task force, and these have to do with creating more equity between the parties' children. The task force crafted several solutions to answer those issues, and they're detailed in the at numbers 1 through 5 on page 2 of the overview. I'm not going into the details on though to keep my time short. And that's because I want to get to the other big piece of this bill, and that is the portion where we're asking to stop interest accruing on child support arrears. In Minnesota law, once a child support obligor is a full month behind in their child support obligation, it is mandatory to start collecting interest on the arrears. They have the ability to get the interest stopped if they pay for 12 months full and complete payments. But for some people that may have a job change or a short period of unemployment, it can interrupt that schedule and they can get kicked out of the ability to get their interest stopped, even though they're working and even though they might have paid all their obligation. Sometimes interest expense is so high on an obligation that even if the person pays their child support and 20% towards arrears is required by law, they never get ahead. They get further into debt every month. And we think that's really inappropriate and non-incentive for obligors. There was a study in 2007 that was looking at the increasing child support arrears across the country. And they said it's the existence of this interest accrual that's charging all these arrears to increase, and that most of those arrears are sitting on people that make less than $10,000 a year. So Ramsey County has found that charging interest is not a good enforcement tool, and it severely impacts low-income workers. Therefore, we propose that this bill to eliminate the interest charging on all the child support cases. And thank you for your attention. That's all I have, and Ms. Rosso and I will be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. We're going to stop before we take the third testifier and just see if members have questions of the testifiers or the bill's author or DHS. They're available for questions. Do any members have questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I think I asked this last time the bill was before us like last year, whenever that was. And I just want to bring this out just very clearly, because I think the concern of this committee is, how is this for kids? What does this do for the children? That's frankly the thing. And of course, you can't talk about children without talking about their families. That's all clear. But the real issue here is, how does this help children or not help children? So I would like to ask the testifiers, just to be clear, on the task force, who was representing the interests of children? And did that person or persons support this ultimate proposal?
Ms. Anderson or Ms. Rosso or Representative Becker Finn, who would like to address that question?
Madam Chair, I can
go
try
ahead,
to answer
Rosso.
That question. So the members of the task force included legal assistance, the legal assistance program that were looking at the interests of parents and children. There were also two parents that were obligors, child support obligors, and two parents that were child support obligees on the task force. And it may not seem like it, but those of us that work in the child support field, we are looking out for the whole family, the parents, the grandparents that or aunts and uncles that may be involved, and the children. But specifically, Representative Liebling, there were two parents for representing the obligors, what is sometimes referred to as the non-custodial parents, two parents representing the obligees, or as sometimes known as the custodial parents, and then specifically the legal assistance representation.
Chair Liebling?
Well, thank you. Well, that's disappointing, I have to say. And I'm not saying that anybody who's else on the task force isn't thinking about the kids. I'm sure you all are, but I would feel more comforted. I mean, this is a really complicated policy, and I know everyone's trying to balance all of the interests here. I would feel better if there had been somebody from the Children's Defense Fund or someone whose interest is clearly about children and not about the parents' interests, because we know in this area, it's often really hard to separate that. So not that that makes me not want to support the bill, but I sure would feel better if there had been somebody whose interest was clearly looking out for the children. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's a good point that Representative Liebling makes. I will note that most of us who are on this committee were not in office when this task force was set up and the membership decided. I do think, I mean, I can tell you as the author of this bill, my intent is to be doing this bill to take better care of kids and make sure that they are financially supported so that they can, that is not a barrier to them leading healthy, full lives. I think, you know, the goal here, and I didn't touch on this yet, but I think the other important thing to note is that when a parent falls so far behind in their payments, it becomes, why even try? And I certainly saw that in the time that I worked in family court early on in my career, that the parent, once the arrears get so bad, why would you even bother paying? Because you're never going to dig yourself out of that hole. And so I think, the goal and ultimately then the support doesn't get paid and then the support isn't there to support those kids. And so I think, I can tell you at least as far as my legislative intent in bringing this forward, it's in making sure that kids are financially supported by both parents and that we're not disproportionately harming low income kids, because we know that the current system is disproportionately harmful for lower income families. And I think that's the last thing that we should be trying, be part of. We should be trying to improve that for lower income families throughout our state.
Thank you. Ms. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for your question, Representative Liebling. I wouldn't be promoting this bill if I didn't think it was in the best interest of the children. That has been my main focus on this. For one thing, when the child support obligations are too high, it drives the fathers away. That is not good for the children. When I bring contempt actions and I put people in jail for not paying their child support, when I do that, I need to know I'm trying to enforce an order that's correct. And I have had parent after parent, custodial parent, come to court and say, I'd rather get something than nothing. Let's start it down low and see if we can get this person on the right track. So I fully believe this bill is good for children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify for the record that, this bill would impact all obligors equally. Sometimes it's the father, sometimes it's the mother. It isn't just one one moms or dads that have child support obligations.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. I have a question for Chair Liebling. Go ahead.
No, I just want to clarify, despite my question, I appreciate what the testifiers are saying, and especially what Chair Becker-Finn is saying. I voted for this bill in Judiciary, and I do support it. And I just really wanted to bring that out because these kinds of bills are very complicated, and very few of us as legislators are going to be able to really dig through the details and sort of make the independent judgments that we usually like to make. So with these kind of bills, we're somewhat dependent on, maybe more than usual on, the people who come before us and tell us that they do understand the ins and outs. And I do feel, that this bill is an improvement. So I just wanted to make it clear to everybody. I appreciate that Chair Becker-Finn is carrying it. That does give me a lot of comfort because I know she's very attentive to this issue. But, this is one of those bills where it isn't perfect, as she started out saying. There's really no way to make these kinds of bills perfect. And so just wanted to clarify that I am not opposed to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Ms. Anderson, can you talk about the table that you helped create and whether it's going to be a problem because it's static and how is there a language in the bill that suggests how often we should update that table and address implications of inflation changes and cost of living changes?
That's one of the things we tried to address a little bit last year in the negotiations, but we didn't come up with a solution. But because it's been 3 years since the last time, I did adjust the bottom few ranges of the table to account for that change. My point about adjusting for inflation and those kind of things, where we have to worry about that is at the bottom of the table. The percentages that are people paying towards their support through the rest of the table, if inflation happens, those percentages will be fine. It's just at the lower end that we need to worry. And I would say that maybe every 4 years, the beginning of the table should be looked at.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Anderson. I am not seeing any more questions, so I will go to our last testifier. Jason Smith, please introduce yourself to the committee, state your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Hello.
Please proceed, Mr. Smith. We can hear you.
All right. My name is Jason Smith. I live in North Mankato, Minnesota. I was on the Legislative Child Support Task Force. I am a non-custodial parent. So I was a parent that represented children. Representative Liebling, I think that was a very good question. What does this have to do with kids? And I think that's such an important question because there has not been at one time that child support orders are mandated to go directly to children. There's no accountability for any of the child support orders that are put out there. They're given to a parent. They're taken from a parent, given to another parent to do with how they please. I think it's very important that families are financially supported. And I'm here representing non-custodial parents, parents from a two household families, separated parents that have two households. And I think this is one of the issues with the bill is it doesn't go far enough. Yeah, it's not perfect. We can make it much better. And that's what I'm asking, for help with. I think this is a very important bill to dig through the details and to find out exactly what those details are that we are missing. I think this committee is an important committee to understand deeply the reasons behind child support. And as was stated, you know, too high of child support orders, it drives fathers away, and that's really the case. And so I just want to dig into a few details. It was said that the Orange County study, that's Orange County, California, the study realized that child support orders should be no higher than 19% of a person's income. In California, income is determined before taxes, and the child support orders include medical and child care. In Minnesota, child support orders are considered after taxes, and medical and child care is taken out of those orders. So even at 16%, it sounds like it's lower than what the Orange County study said. It's actually much higher than what the Orange County study supported. And so we really need to compare apples to apples here when we review these kind of statistics. The other big issue that I want to point out, it's so hard to like try to fill this in a couple of minutes, because it is, there's so many details that are largely being ignored by this bill. The table that you look at is basically what the USDA has considered the cost for raising children at certain income levels. The issue with the table, and it's actually a really big issue, is that when you have two separate households, each household is paying for their own expenses. Now, the table shows what the cost of raising a child is using a USDA model, and that model is based off of a married household with children. That's one household with children. So the data and the model that's used to create this table, there's a large error, because 30% of that cost is housing. That means each parent is paying for their own housing at their own house, yet it's included in the table. And so the obligor, or the non-custodial parent like myself, they're paying for the cost of housing for the other parent. So quite literally and very simply, the table needs to be decreased by at least 30% across the board to account for the housing expense. We could go on and include things like vehicle expenses, because each parent has a vehicle. They pay for that car payment. They pay for the insurance. Sure, there's a nominal cost for fuel and things like that, but none of it is determined by the amount of parenting time that a parent has. And I just want to make it clear that I'm representing these separated divorced families that have two households. That child has two households, and both of those households need to be financially supported. I'm not here to try to represent, you know, some parent that doesn't want to see their child. Look, to be honest, you can charge them whatever you want to, because that just amazes me that people don't want to be financially, emotionally involved in raising their child. So, you know, there is a lot of information to unpack here, a lot of it that's not being discussed, and a lot of it that's not being told. I find it really strange that the support of this bill is from organizations that financially benefit from Title IV-D federal incentives. It almost, you know, for 30 years, I mean, you already heard it, you know, we have been throwing people in jail, fathers in jail for not paying their child support. These low-income fathers, they can't pay their child support. They go to jail. They lose their license. And for 30 years, that's been what has been going on here in Minnesota. And now all of a sudden, we want to help the low-income wage earners. I don't buy it. And I think a big reason for this, it seems the Department of Human Services, Child Support Division, county attorneys, judges, you name it, they are graded and their financial incentive from the federal government is graded on the amount of collections that they can make. I mean, sure, if we lower the low income wages or the low income child support, if we get rid of that completely or lower it like that it is, you will see in a few years that Minnesota will have flying colors as far as how they collect child support. And those federal incentives will increase to the counties and to the state. I feel like we're not really doing what needs to be done for all families. As you can see, child support does increase for those median income families. And those are the same families that do pay their child support and don't have as much arrears because, quite frankly, they're scared. They'll go to jail. They'll lose their license. They'll lose their Boilermaker's license or license to work. And so they have to. They're forced to pay this child support and live a lifestyle that's not accurate to the data and to the models that are used. I sent off the minority report to everybody on the committee. You guys can take a look at that before or after, but I would really like to work with some people to, like, let's get child support fixed. We're trying to fix the trim on a house that is built on Jell-O and quicksand. Let's fix the foundation of this child support and everything else will fall into place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, for that testimony. Representative Becker Finn, would you like to respond or make closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's important to highlight that I think, you know, Mr. Smith's testimony really highlights what I think Representative Liebling was getting at, you know, where, you know, he started his testimony with saying he was here to, you know, he was serving on the task force on behalf of children, but then emphatically stated a couple times that he was here on behalf of non-custodial parents. And I think, I agree with Representative Liebling, it would have been better had we had somebody who was fully there to represent the best interests of kids on the task force. But I don't have a time machine, and this is where we find ourselves. And, you know, I'll note again that both Representative Scott and Senator Kiffmeyer served on this task force, and they are both supporters of this bill. And as noted, a lot of this is ties in with federal law, which I, you know, we can all advocate for, but, you know, we ultimately can't force those changes to happen at the federal level. Further, I will say that I am already working with others. I don't think it's right that we take away people's driver's licenses for failure to pay child support. I think the civil contempt system is a tool that maybe isn't as helpful in these kinds of situations. You know, ultimately, we want families to be getting along. We want whoever the obligor is to be paying financially to support their kids. And ultimately, we want kids to be supported. And so that's really my intent in bringing this bill forward, and appreciate the discussion and hope to have your support. So thank you, members and Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. And I want to thank the members of the task force and the work that our testifiers have done serving on that task force. I'm very grateful for a public attorney and a judge who garnered the wages of my father after my parents were divorced and paid child support. Now, that back in the 70s, it was only $200 a month, but it really, I'm sure, meant a great deal to my mother to support two children. So thank you for all the work you're doing. So with that, members, I'm going to renew my motion to re-refer House File 980 as amended to be recommended to the Ways and Means Committee. So members, this is going to take a roll call vote. So please unmute yourself. Ms. Hansen, please proceed. Chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Moore?
Yes.
Thank you. Moore, yes. Representative Novotny?
Novotny.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Chair Schultz, that's 19 ayes and zero nays.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen, and the motion is approved. Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. Okay, members, the next bill we have for consideration is House File 1436. Representative Hansen, would you like to move that House File 1436 be referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you.
So Ms. Representative Hansen moves that House File 1436 be referred to Judiciary Finance and Civil Law. It looks like you have an A1 amendment. Would you like us to move the A1 amendment before you start the discussion of the bill?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Would you like to briefly just tell us what the A1 does briefly?
If I could defer the explanation of the amendment to DHS, I think they will have a better explanation of that. I believe that we have Jennifer here from DHS.
Okay, maybe we'll see if there's any, if it's not a problem with Lead Albright, maybe we can adopt it and then they can better explain the amendment and the underlying bill for us. Not seeing any objections. So members, this will be a voice vote. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, would you like to begin the discussion and then we can turn it over to DHS and your testifier?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'd like to move that HF 1436 be referred to Judiciary. I'll provide an overview of this agency bill for the committee. And though there are no testifiers planned today for this bill, DHS is here to help answer questions following my overview. I would like to also just take a second to thank Senators Hoffman, Ecke, and Abler for carrying this companion bill in the Senate as well. HF 1436 contains two provisions. The first piece of this bill ensures that appeals related to child support good cause exemptions occur in a timely manner and does not require parents to choose between their safety and their ability to continue to receive the state assistance that they need to support themselves and their children. People should not be put in a position to choose to lose their benefits that they need because of a safety concern presented within the child support system. If someone believes there is a safety risk to themselves or their children, this allows them to opt out of child support services. It is a federal requirement to have this opt-out option available, and this bill moves the state-level appeal to begin before the family's benefits like MFIP are sanctioned. If the county denies a good cause request, this authorizes an appeal to the Department of Human Services to be done within 30 calendar days after a county denies a request for good cause to cooperate with child support. This puts all child support enforcement efforts on hold until DHS issues a decision. It also clarifies that the public authority for child support may issue a notice of noncompliance either one, when 30 calendar days have passed since that county denial or the state agency denial, whichever is later, or two, the individual has not cooperated as required in 256.741 in subdivision 5. The second piece of this bill authorizes Minnesota courts to transfer court cases involving child support to tribal courts when the tribal 40 agencies provide services on the case. So allowing district courts to transfer child support cases to tribal courts when certain requirements are met prevents tribal families from the burden of complying with an unnecessarily complicated process in multiple court systems when seeking to modify child support. Essentially, this stops families from having to go to court in two places when district and tribal courts are engaged. This is not a new bill. This portion has been passed in the House twice in the last few sessions. And with that, Chair Schultz, I would turn it over to you and Stan for questions. Again, we have some folks on board to answer questions if we need that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Are there any questions from members for the bill author or for DHS? I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Hansen, any closing comments?
None for me, Chair Schultz. I would just like to thank the committee members for hearing this bill and for helping it make things easier for families when they're going through these systems. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen renews her motion to re-refer to House File 1436 to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. This will require a roll call vote. Chair votes aye. Please proceed, Ms. Hansen.
Certainly. Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye. Sorry. Keel,
aye. That's okay. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Knorr?
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny is aye.
Novotny, aye. Thank you. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandel?
Aye.
Sandel, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Chair Schultz, that's 19 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. The motion is approved. The next bill for consideration is House File 1435. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you, members of the committee. I'd like to move that HF 1435 be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Today, I will provide a brief overview of this agency bill, and then I will turn it over to Jennifer Sommerfeld from DHS for a deeper dive. We also have Heidi from DHS with us, who will be available to answer technical questions if needed. And again, I would just like to take a second to thank Senators Hoffman, Etke, and Abler for also carrying this companion bill in the Senate. HF 1435 makes a number of technical and housekeeping corrections to the statutes governing adoptions from foster care and transfers of permanent legal and physical custody, the North Star Care for Children program, permanency, and the definition of foster care. It also makes a correction in the statute authorizing the co-location of a foster child with their parent in a specially licensed or approved co-location substance use disorder facility by referencing tribally approved facilities in addition to the licensed facilities. On its face, this is a complex bill, but thankfully, DHS has provided members with a really great summary document with each section of the changes broken down. It's important for us to make these changes so that youth and families impacted by these statutes are empowered with the tools, language, and resources that honors their inherent dignity and worth as they navigate these complex systems. Youth and families who go through these systems are often also navigating trauma and grief. So it's my belief that it is incumbent upon the state to make sure our systems are as efficient and person-centered as possible. Jennifer from DHS will be providing the committee more information about this. However, the high-level aspects of this bill include the following. One, corrections allowing the co-location of a child in foster care with a parent who's in substance use disorder treatment program. Two, clarifications in the North Star Care for Children statutes regarding voluntary custodial designations for eligibility, relative custodians, relinquishments, and non-recurring adoption and kinship expense reimbursement. Three, technical corrections to the North Star Care for Children and permanency statutes. And four, updates to the adoption and transfer of permanent legal and physical custody, also known as TPLPC statutes. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifier, Jennifer from DHS. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Jennifer Sommerfeld, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Representative Schultz. I'm Jennifer Sommerfeld with the Department of Human Services. First of all, thank you, Representative Hansen, for carrying this bill for the department. And thank you, Representative Schultz, for giving us a hearing today. We're very happy to be hearing this bill. It's been introduced quite a few times over the years, and we just have not had good luck with timing on that. So we really appreciate it. As noted by Representative Hansen, this bill has a number of provisions, and you should have a bill index and summary, which hopefully will explain quite a few of them to you. Many of the changes in the bill I would classify as housekeeping. Some are technical. For example, those might correct cross-references or move language around in statutes so that it aligns with the proper flow of a case. So when we drafted this bill, our staff broke the provisions out into categories, which you'll see identified on that bill index that we sent you. And I'm going to kind of walk through those categories with a little bit more information than Representative Hansen provided to you. The categories are technical and housekeeping, changes to North Star Care for Children statutes, and then updates to our foster care, adoption, and transfer of permanent legal and physical custody statutes. What I'm going to do then is provide a high-level overview within each of those categories. And then, as was noted, we have a staff person, Heidi Ambisa Scallet from DHS, who drafted this bill and is very familiar with all of the statutes that we're working on today. So she will be available to help with questions as well. It included in the technical and housekeeping provisions, as was noted, there's a change to the statute allowing co-location of a child in foster care with a parent in a substance use disorder treatment program. This bill is correcting language that was drafted in 2019. And I'll say, I think the summary said last year, but that was a typo for me. I apologize for that. But it was drafted in 2019 as part of our Family First policy bill that year. And what that change did was it reflected a change in the definition of foster care that the federal government created to allow states to and Minnesota counties to draw down 4E funding to help pay for the costs of room and board for a child who's in foster care who is co-located with a parent in a specialized facility that treats parents with children together. We were asked to create some language that was going to ensure that those facilities are specially licensed, which is the case, and we added some language. Inadvertently, the tribal approved facilities were left out. So this cleans that up, along with cleaning up a little bit the statutory references. In the category of clarifying North Star Care for Children statutes, there is a lack of clarity in these statutes that negatively impacts the ability of local services agencies and court staff to meet permanency timelines for some of the children in foster care. These issues cause confusion over how non-reoccurring expense reimbursement programs are administered. And we hope that the changes will enable the department to provide better and clearer guidance to local social service agencies, courts, and providers on North Star Care for Children requirements. The specific provisions in the bill that I'll talk through are there's a clarification of the legal permanency requirement for children to be eligible for North Star kinship assistance. There have been instances in which county staff or attorneys and the courts have applied a family law lens to child protection dispositions and permanency dispositions by allowing joint custody between parents and a relative custodian. A transfer of permanent legal and physical custody, or a TPLPC, that's a permanency designation. So doing that will make a family not eligible for North Star kinship assistance because it's not a permanency result if the child is remaining in the custody of that child's parents. So when that mistake is made, permanency is delayed until the courts can go back and correct that disposition. So the bill will correct that. Federal and state law allow relative custodians receiving North Star kinship assistance to adopt the child for whom they're receiving assistance and to be eligible to apply for and receive North Star adoption assistance. However, currently state exclusion statutes pertaining to North Star adoption assistance are contradictory, and they exclude relative custodians from receiving North Star adoption assistance. This bill clears up that contradiction by clarifying that there's an exception to the exclusion. This aligns the statute with state law, other state law, federal law, and our current practices. Currently, non-recurring adoption expense reimbursement program eligibility and administration requirements are still located under Chapter 259A. That's Minnesota's former adoption assistance program, our legacy program. This legislation moves requirements regarding those non-recurring adoption expenses to Minnesota's current adoption assistance program, which is Chapter 256N. That was a drafting oversight when North Star was created. The legislation also rectifies an oversight by establishing that eligibility and program requirements based upon the commissioner's current administration of the programs and federal requirements apply. So that is one of the other changes. In the technical corrections to North Star Care for Children and Permanency statute buckets, there's a number of statutes changed. These are all intended to correct inaccurate program names and terminology and statutory cross-references that create confusion for staff and child welfare agencies. So these were drafting errors when North Star was created back in, I believe, well, I'm going to be wrong on the date. So 2015, I think, is when it became effective, but the bill previously was drafted before that. And then finally, the third category is updating adoption and TPLPC statutes. This bill corrects some of the sections in those statutes related to foster care adoptions and TPLPCs to reflect updated departmental procedures and current Minnesota and federal laws and regulations. These corrections also correct unclear and conflicting terms and procedures and enable the department to provide better and clear guidance to local social service agencies. This is done by providing some consistency between definitions and processes that align them with practice and statute. It updates the relative foster care placement preference in order to reflect the statutory definition of relative under 260C. And in doing this, it ensures that throughout Chapter 260C, the definition includes the parent or guardian, legal guardian of a child's sibling. So that is a placement preference and considered a relative under state law. So we just needed to make sure that was clear and aligned throughout statute. We also provide explicit permission for the commissioner to contract with an agency to manage the state adoption exchange, which is what we're doing now. It's not clear in that statute, but we have the ability to do that under other statutes. So we just want to make sure the statute's clarified. We're moving statutes to address the requirements for writing a child's social and medical history from the adoption section of law to the foster care section of law. And we're doing this because the social medical histories are supposed to begin being developed when a child is in foster care. And right now the language is in the adoption statute, which is can result in permanency delays if staff at agencies are following statute rather than earlier than the law requires. We also are clarifying who should be receiving copies of that social and medical history based upon existing law best practice and current policy. We also have a provision that allows youth ages 18 to 21 who are in extended foster care to consent to their own adoptions. And as we're doing that, we're removing the automatic termination of an adult's sibling relationship upon adoption of the child. And that aligns foster care adoption with regard to the sibling with private adoptions where we do not terminate siblings' relationships. Clarifying that the requirement that a child live in a pre-adoptive home for at least 3 months prior to adoption, that is actually for private adoptions, not public foster care adoptions. So we've seen that courts have improperly applied that standard at times, and we're making sure the statute's clear that that does not apply. Another provision gives the courts the authority to terminate a parent's rights of a child under guardianship of the commissioner when a parent has executed a consent to adoption and the identified prospective adopted parent does not adopt for any reason. And this is in alignment with private adoption statutes and clarifies a child's legal status when consent to adoption does not result in a finalization of adoption by the identified prospective parent. The bill clarifies the role of the commissioner when we receive adoption placement agreements and are supposed to execute them. It clarifies that the commissioner is to review those, not simply sign them. We have responsibilities to ensure that counties and the adoption is in fact in alignment with the Indian Child Welfare Act and the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act and 4E requirements. And so we need to just make sure it's clear in statute that we review, not simply sign. The bill also allows tribal access to existing state funds for adoption placement services, and then clarifies that children under guardianship of the commissioner do not need to already be in an adoptive placement to be eligible to receive adoption services, which is current practice, and allows adoption agencies that are, in fact, recruiting, seeking adoptive families for those children to continue with that work. So that is my long-winded and high-level summary of the bill, and we're here to answer questions. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sommerfeld. Are there any questions from members? I'm not seeing any questions from members. Representative Hansen, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say, members, we know that foster care, kinship, and adoption are really complex processes for families. If you've ever known anyone who's gone through these processes, we know that they can be frustrating, expensive sometimes, scary. And I think that this bill has been a long time coming. I think it's critical that we do our part to support families and children that are going through this process. Every child deserves a safe home and a safe family, and this bill will help us get just a little bit closer to achieving that and doing our part to support our kids and making Minnesota stay the best place to grow up, raise a family, and just continue to just be the show our values and really stand up for our kids. So thank you again for the members for hearing this. Like I said, I know this is a complex bill, so I'm definitely open to answering any questions. Jennifer is an amazing resource for this. And I'll turn it back over to you, Chair Schultz, unless there are any other questions I can answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And there's no fiscal note for this bill. It's a policy bill. That was true of 1436 as well. So with that, members, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Hansen, and thank you to our testifiers and agency leads. Okay, members, I have to make some corrections. I need to make a motion to reconsider House File 1436 because there was no A1 amendment. My apologies. That's probably why Representative Hansen couldn't explain it. So I need to make a motion to re-refer House File 1436 to Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee, and I believe this motion will need to take the roll call. Just hold on 1 second. Okay, so let's do this first, and then I'll get to our second item. So, Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll call again on House File 1436 to re-refer to Judiciary Finance and Civil Law, not as amended? Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is the motion to reconsider?
I think we have to bring it back because we referred it out. So it's still in our possession. So the motion is to reconsider, and we can probably do that in a voice vote. And then I think we need to do a roll call vote on the motion to re-refer.
Thank you.
So the motion to reconsider, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Now, members, I'm going to make a motion to re-refer House File 1436 to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. This will require a roll call vote. Chair votes aye. Thank you, Ms. Hansen.
Sure. Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle.
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel.
Aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Last but not least, Schumacher, aye. 19 ayes, 0 nays, Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen, and the motion is approved. Sorry about that, members. Also, I'm going to make a motion to send House File 1435 to the General Register. And this will be a roll call as well. Since this is a policy bill, we can move it out. Ms. Hansen, please take the roll on the motion to refer House File 1435 to the General Register, to place House File 1435 on the General Register. Chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Thank you. Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Thank you. Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Thank you. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny votes aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Thank you, members. 19 ayes and 0 nays.
The motion is approved. Thank you, Ms. Hansen and members. The next item for consideration is House File 1305. So House File 1305 is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. Representative Rasmussen, would you like to explain your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 1305 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill today, Madam Chair. This bill was brought to me by a nonprofit that operates a residential crisis stabilization unit out of Fergus Falls that primarily serves West Central Minnesota. DHS has been very engaged in preparing and advancing this bill, so their work and support is also greatly appreciated. For context, a residential crisis stabilization unit provides short-term residential services to adults experiencing a mental health crisis, such as depression with suicidal ideation, high anxiety, and panic attacks. The crisis stabilization unit helps clients regain a baseline level of functioning through a stabilization treatment, developing a crisis prevention plan, and a discharge plan with resources. Most clients would be at risk of hospitalization without these services. Crisis stabilization is a lower cost alternative that can help keep our mental health hospital capacity reserved for more severe cases. Residential crisis stabilization units can accept private insurance and public plans, such as medical assistance. However, DHS doesn't have authority to develop rates for crisis stabilization services. Currently, DHS reimburses these providers under adult foster care, but both providers and DHS recognize that the 24-hour mental health services provided by crisis stabilization units cost more than the adult foster care rate provides. Given the current reimbursement structure, there are only two providers statewide of residential crisis stabilization services. DHS has observed a shrinking number of providers over the years, not because of a lack of demand, but given the unsustainable rate structure. House File 1305 allows DHS to establish a statewide rate for crisis stabilization services. Rates to be paid must not exceed the rates charged by providers to other payers. In addition, providers will be required to submit annual cost reports to inform the rate setting process. This bill will stabilize the crisis stabilization units we have left as a state and hopefully lay the groundwork for providing more lower cost short-term services that provide critical support to our neighbors experiencing a mental health crisis. Madam Chair, I have one testifier today, and with your permission, I would have Mr. Scalgi give his testimony, and then I would be happy to take member questions. We also have Ms. Grom from DHS with us today to help answer questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Mr. Scalgi, please introduce yourself for the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Schultz, members of the committee. My name is Steve Scalgi. I'm the president of Productive Alternatives Incorporated, based out of Fergus Falls, but with offices across the central part of the state. I'm here to testify on behalf of this bill, House File 1305, for our Crisis Stabilization Unit. I'll give you some brief background and a little data to support Representative Rasmussen's comments. Our crisis stabilization unit was started in 2007 on with a state grant to, as an experiment, if you will, to try to see if we could present an option in rural parts of the state to alleviate the lack of mental health hospital beds that are available, but also to reduce the number of people that are being hospitalized. We primarily serve the four counties of Becker, Clay, Ottertail, and Wilkin, who are our mental health initiative, but we can and have served people from all over the state. As was mentioned, we are licensed under adult foster care, and that was largely because at the time that we were starting, there really wasn't any other category that the department could license us under, so they kind of stuck us, if you will, into adult foster care. Which has basically been the problem for us all along. Those rates have been frozen for reimbursement since our inception. So there hasn't been any change in our foster care licensing rate, which is $262 since we started. Because that's at that rate, we are also able to bill, as mentioned, third-party payers and Medicare, but it's at that same rate. Our actual budgeted rate using our historical data is $541. So we have to supplement every person that we serve with state crisis grants, mental health initiative grants, raised monies, and Productive Alternatives has contributed quite a bit of dollars out of our pocket, if you will, to help subsidize the program. And it's really because of the rate freeze. We initiated this bill last year, and it was initiated at the request of the department because they are not able to adjust our rates given the verbiage in the bill, which is indicated by the changes that were being suggested through the department. So if we can, and we had good progress, we had several hearings last year, but then COVID came along and kind of took care of that, if you will. But the real purpose of CSU is to help people avoid hospitalization. Rates in a mental health bed in our region of approximately $2,000 a day. There's a CBHH hospital in Fergus Falls at roughly $1,700 a day. Our rate of $541 is very, very reasonable. And that's really how we have continued to exist, because we have four beds. They are almost always full. So we're used constantly. We have an average length of stay of probably about 4 to 5 days. We can go up to 10 days to 2 weeks if needed. But basically, it's avoiding hospitalization. We have about 100 intakes per year on average. So our real purpose in this bill is to try to give the department some leverage to allow us to be able to adjust rates, which have been frozen at the 262 rate for many, many years. And just briefly, what our purpose is to, again, keep people out of the hospital. And we have many people over the years that averaged maybe 2 to 4 hospitalizations over the course of a year that are now not attending any hospitalization at all, because they have the ability to either come into our unit or contact us by phone, just knowing that we're there is a huge benefit to folks in the region, because they know they have an option to call us, contact us, be available. We're there 24/7 if they need us. And we do operate a 24/7 hotline as well. So we would ask that this bill be recognized as a language change that gives the department the ability to work with us to set rates, and appreciate your consideration of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scouge. Do we have any questions from members for the testifier or for the bill author? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Rasmussen for bringing this forward. You know, in my experience, alternatives to hospitalization are so critical to the overall pursuit of mental wellness and community support. You know, we've got years of academic research that has shown, you know, these types of programs are vital to improving our overall outcomes. And so I just really appreciated hearing this bill today, and I'm really glad to support you and everybody impacted by this bill. So thank you again.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Rasmussen, we don't have a fiscal note yet for this bill for this session. Can you talk about the cost, maybe from the fiscal note that was generated, if there was one generated last year?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we have requested a fiscal note for this bill and have yet to receive it back. I don't believe that we had a fiscal note on it from the previous session. I would anticipate that the fiscal note will not be substantial, given that we only have two providers in the state, and they actually are only allowed to have a maximum of 4 beds per unit. But I'll also see if Ms. Grom from the Department of Human Services wants to comment any on how they're thinking about costs. And then the other point I would make, as Representative Hansen made and Mr. Scouge made, you know, I think on a dynamic basis, you know, this is something that will save the state money by avoiding hospitalizations. But I'll defer to Ms. Grom to see if she has anything additional to add on the fiscal note.
Ms. Grom, please state your name for the record and your affiliation, and if you have anything to add about the potential fiscal note. You may not, but we can't hear you, Ms. Grom.
Sorry about that. Madam Chair, members, my name is Christy Grom, and I'm with the Department of Human Services. We do have our fiscal staff, Ms. Bailey, on the line that might be able to answer some questions about last year's fiscal note, if there was one. We haven't completed the fiscal note yet for this year, but I'll defer to Ms. Bailey.
Ms. Bailey.
Hello, Chair Schultz. This is Elise Bailey, Fiscal Policy Director of the Department. Unfortunately, I don't have any other information either. We're working on the fiscal note, and we haven't had time to fully complete it. So apologies for not having any additional information.
No apologies necessary. We know how overwhelmed our staff are. So we will wait. This is being laid over, so we can revisit that when we have it. Representative Rasmussen, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present this bill today. Members of this committee know that there's a mental health crisis occurring in our communities, and with this crisis ongoing, Minnesota is at risk of losing an important tool in our mental health response toolkit. This bill will allow DHS to work with the crisis stabilization providers to set a more sustainable rate and help provide care to Minnesotans experiencing a mental health crisis, while, as was stated earlier, preventing more expensive hospitalizations. I would ask for member support of this bill, and will renew my motion that House File 1305 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. And just for clarification, I don't think we need to make motions to lay over. I just take the action that I laid over for possible inclusion.
So thank you, Madam Chair.
We're all learning, right? Okay, let's see. So with that, we'll lay it over for possible inclusion for House File 1305. I'm going to try to get to the next item, and if we don't finish, we'll wrap it up at 6 o'clock tonight. So we're going to move to House File 1559. And Representative Rasmussen, would you like to make the motion to re-refer House File 1559 to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 1559 be re-referred to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee.
And it looks like you have a small A1 amendment. Is this correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. Before I start explaining the bill, I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of moving the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Rasmussen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present House File 1559 today. This bill was brought to me by the Department of Human Services and Minnesota Department of Health as a critical update to Minnesota's Safe Place for Newborns law. This bill has both agencies' full support, and I very much appreciate their hard work on this important issue. Enacted in 2000, the Safe Place for Newborn law allows a mother to safely and anonymously leave her unharmed newborn within 7 days of birth in a medical facility or to dial 911 to dispatch an ambulance for relinquishment. Medical staff will give shelter, health care, and aid to the newborn until transferred to the care of Human Services. This law is designed to help a mother protect her child when facing extraordinarily challenging circumstances. Simply put, this law saves lives and was passed in response to tragedies involving abandoned infants. I'm here today with House File 1559 to address a few serious problems in Minnesota's Safe Place for Newborns law. Currently, the law does not allow a mother to give birth in a hospital setting and use the Safe Place protections. Once a mother gives birth in a medical setting, anonymity cannot be maintained under our current law. DHS and MDH fear that this oversight discourages mothers from delivering babies safely in a medical setting, leaving them to deliver alone at home or in another non-medical setting. This bill continues the anonymity protection provided in Safe Place statutes by creating a process delinking the mother's identity from her newborn through birth records in those situations where a mother relinquishes her infant in a medical setting after giving birth. In addition, this bill also addresses important equity issues facing Native American infants who are afforded protections under the Indian Child Welfare Act and the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. Currently, the law does not allow for asking the mother if the newborn may have lineage to an Indian tribe and, if known, the name of the tribe. This bill explicitly allows Safe Places to ask for this information and report to DHS, helping to ensure Native American infants are given the protections and rights they deserve. Madam Chair, with your permission, I would now turn to Jennifer Sommerfeld of DHS to address any other items I missed, and then I'd be happy to stand for members' questions.
Ms. Sommerfeld, welcome back. State your name for the record and affiliation, and then if you have anything to add.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and members of the committee, and I do not have anything to add to what Representative Jordan said. I think he summarized the bill very well, and thank you for hearing it, and we thank Representative Rasmussen for carrying it for us. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sommerfeld. Chair Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Rasmussen. I think this is a really good bill, but the question I have, and I don't know if you can answer this or maybe DHS has to answer it, but the piece that you mentioned about encouraging mothers to give birth in a hospital, or at least not discouraging them, it occurs to me that that only works if they know about it. And so the question I have is there any provision or are there plans that the department has so that prospective mothers or, you know, pregnant women know about this so that it actually does what it's intended to do?
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for that really important question. You know, right now, if you actually Google Safe Place for Newborns, you know, the department's website pulls up, and if you just click on the first page there and get some basic information, it explicitly calls out and says, this, you know, if you give birth at a hospital, this protection is not provided to you. And so for any woman who is seeking out that information, it's pretty clear that the medical setting would not allow these protections. The bill does not, you know, contain any information or funding to go and publicize these changes, but I'll turn to Ms. Sommerfeld to see if DHS has any thoughts on what their plans would be to communicate these changes to women who might utilize this program.
Ms. Sommerfeld, to the question of how we get information to mothers.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, Representative Liebling, Representative Rasmussen. So actually, I will say that the reason we discovered this was we were, there was some money provided a number of years ago to the agency to engage in a public campaign to tell people about this law and how it works. And that's when some folks in our department who were not there when this law was passed realized that our guidance to hospitals and our documentation was clear that you could not do this. And that was kind of the impetus behind this bill, was we did not think that that was the best way to go forward with the policy, was to discourage births in a medical setting. And so we worked with MDH to develop the statute that the changes you have before you. I think what we would do going forward now is we would alter our guidance that we have. I understand there's signage in hospitals in addition to what we have online, and those things would need to be changed just to make sure it's clear to people.
Thank you, Ms. Sommerfeld. Chair Liebling.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That's good to know. Appreciate that.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the author for bringing this forward and working to try and make this a much more streamlined process and a safer process. I noticed that there's a lot of conversation or language around anonymity in this bill. Can you speak a little bit to why that is so important in this bill?
Representative Rasmussen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bonner, for the question. The anonymity piece is kind of that core element of the Safe Place for Newborn law, and has been since it was originally enacted in 2000. And the idea there is for a mother where that would be a barrier, where there would be a linkage perhaps for child protection to get involved, or you know, any other type of information that would tie the infant back to the mother. The idea is that providing that anonymity creates a situation where mothers feel like they're able to drop their child off at the hospital. And unfortunately, the alternative, the risk that we're trying to solve with this, is infant abandonment and trying to solve for those very unique, very rare cases. I don't know if Representative Bonner, if that sufficiently answers your question, or if Ms. Sommerfeld has anything more to provide on that.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you for that explanation. I think it was just critical to have a little bit of that background and why that's so important, and how that would really be helpful to encourage more mothers who may find themselves in a very difficult situation to make this choice and to make the safe choice. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Rasmussen, can you discuss why you needed to add language about the liability for the providers? I know there was already civil law language, but the administrative, can you give us an example of that?
Yes, I believe in the current language, we just wanted to make sure that it was explicit that hospitals were included in this kind of liability protection that was provided to Safe Places. And I believe that we actually, amendment that we had removed hospitals that were added, and that's because they were actually included in the original language of the bill, and so nonpartisan caught that. Chair Schultz, does that answer your question?
I think there's also language that includes not just civil law, but from administrative. I think it's this. I have to put it in front of me, but hold on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would defer to Ms. Sommerfeld to see if she has anything on that.
Ms. Sommerfeld?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do not have an answer for that right now, but I am working to get one for you. So.
And Chair Schultz, I see here in the language, it's, I think page 4, line 21, civil liability or administrative penalty. Language was added. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. I was just wondering if you had an example for administrative penalty, but it looks like DHS will follow up with me on that. So thank you.
Or Madam Chair, maybe House Research may be able to help.
House Research. Who is here from House Research? Maybe you can chime in. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, unfortunately, I cannot shed light on this. Ms. Clarkvist has been handling this bill since it's in the health department statutes, but I can have her follow up with the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Appreciate that. Vice Chair Bonner. Your hand is raised. I'm not sure if you have another question.
My apologies, Madam Chair. I must have forgot to put it down.
Okay, just checking. Okay, closing comments, Representative Rasmussen. I'm not seeing any other questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present this bill and for your attention to this matter. Madam Chair, members, you know, simply put, this bill has the aim of protecting the welfare of newborns in danger of abandonment and helping preserve the health and future of mothers who find themselves in unimaginably challenging situations. I would ask for your support of this bill, and will renew my motion that House File 1559 be re-referred to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen renews his motion to re-refer and recommend House File 1559 as amended to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. This requires a roll call vote. The chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner,
aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle.
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Thank you all. 19 ayes, 0 nays, Chair Schultz.
Okay, the motion is approved. Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Okay, with that, members, we're going to recess until approximately 6 p.m. tonight to take up House File 601. I'm expecting this to take about 30 minutes. So with that, members, we will recess until 6 p.m. Thank you all and see you later tonight. First, I'm going to call Human Services, Finance, and Policy back to order. Thank you for taking your evening for this committee hearing. We have one bill left on our agenda, House File 601. Representative Herr, welcome to the committee. Your bill is in front of the committee and will be laid over for possible inclusion. And it looks like you have an A1 amendment. Would you like us to adopt that or bring that amendment forward so you can get the bill in the shape before you discuss it?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 601. That's my motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion is passed and the A1 is adopted. Okay, Representative Herr, to your bill as amended, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and committee members for hearing House File 601. I know my bill is the only one tonight, but I have a feeling it'll go quickly as it is a great bill and has already been heard in the Senate and has bipartisan support. House File 601 includes needed updates to our state's housing support program to promote stronger pathways to housing stability for individuals experiencing or at risk of homelessness across Minnesota. Housing support is a statewide program that helps cover basic housing costs like rent, food, bed, and linen and laundry. It serves senior and adults with disabilities who have low incomes. More than half of recipients are people of color or American Indian. As I stated earlier, this is a bipartisan bill that helps individuals obtain stable housing in community settings, focusing on those places where individuals have their own lease. It represents a unique public-private partnership with the ability to work directly with private market landlords. It includes two parts. Increase the base rate funding to better meet current costs and make it more feasible for more landlords and providers to participate, And now the second part is changing statute to allow for extended absences in specific situations so that residents can seek needed healthcare treatment without fear of losing their housing. These updates build on temporary changes made earlier in the pandemic response and would benefit residents at risk of homelessness as well as landlords as we move forward together to address our state housing crisis. Madam Chair, I do have testifiers here today to speak on behalf of the bill. The first is Ms. Alicia McNeil. If it's all right with you, I will yield my time to Ms. McNeil.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Ms. McNeil, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Alicia McNeil. I am a program manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis, and I'm also a licensed alcohol and drug counselor.
And please proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Great, thank you. Hello, Madam Chair and members. As I said, my name is Alicia McNeil and currently working with Catholic Charities. Our program works with eligible housing support recipients to find and maintain affordable, stable housing with private market landlords. All 200 clients that my team currently supports in community-based rental units have disabling conditions and have experienced long-term homelessness. However, with the assistance of our program using housing support dollars, they all now have housing through individual leases with their landlords. Monthly housing support payments help tenants cover basic housing needs with rent to landlords and utilities first, but also common necessities like transportation, bed and linens, and cleaning supplies. Housing support has changed the lives of our clients in their journey of obtaining and maintaining housing stability. It is getting harder and harder, though, for our program to meet those needs. Housing support has not kept up with the cost of rent and the additional supports required and expected of this program. More often than not, we are looking at rents that are beyond the housing support base rate, not including utilities. This leaves our program with limited to no financial resources to provide clients with other necessities. Additionally, we are spending nearly as much time relocating existing clients more affordable housing units as we are helping new clients moving into housing. Limits placed by housing support on resident absence is also problematic. Currently, a person cannot be gone more than 18 days at a time without losing their benefits. For individuals with chronic illness, mental illness, or substance use, it means that they have to choose between entering a needed treatment program and giving up their apartment key or not tending to their health needs. Our clients are being forced to choose between their health or their housing, but we know that housing is healthcare. Housing support is a unique public-private partnership that has worked to prevent homelessness and move people into stable housing, but the current rate is not sufficient anymore. The extra $100 a month provided by House File 601 would make it easier for more landlords to say yes when my team calls to ask them about a potential unit for a client. It would mean more tenants could stay in their current units and have a little extra to help cover those basic needs that so many of us take for granted, giving my team more time to help new clients by reducing the amount of moves that we do throughout the year. The change to the absence policy offered by the bill also means a person could get the healthcare treatment that they need and be able to return home after completing treatment instead of returning to homelessness. Through my experience as an alcohol and drug counselor, I have seen the difference one night of homelessness can have on an individual's sobriety. The impact of this policy change for clients needing treatment would be life-changing. These are common sense updates that will support the longevity of housing support programs. These changes will allow programs to be able to meet the program expectations, create more opportunity for program landlord partnerships, and support housing stability for more Minnesotans. Please support House File 601 and the Housing Support Program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McNeil, for that testimony. The second testifier I have is Gina Kotz. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello. My name is Gina Kotz. I am the supportive service manager at the Clay County Housing and Redevelopment Authority that serves Clay County, which is the Moorhead area of northern Minnesota. Our housing supports program is a three-way partnership between Clay County Social Services, who administers the benefits, Clay County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, who holds the contract with Clay County Social Services and handles the room and board responsibilities, and 11 different supplemental service providers in the community. The supplemental service providers include homeless providers, community action agencies, mental health and substance use providers. There are currently over 150 participants scattered throughout the county, and they all have their own apartments with their own leases with private landlords. One of the reasons why this program is so successful in Clay County is that the housing is available in the price range that housing supports can maintain. However, rent and utility costs are increasing consistently every year. Utility costs in Clay County are insanely high. The costs associated with providing housing and related supplies is also very expensive. The program administration is very burdensome. One of the burdensome aspects of this program is that a participant can only be away from their unit for up to 18 days without losing their housing supports benefit. This policy often discourages a person from seeking inpatient mental health or substance use treatment. Also, there has been many times when after an illness or an injury, participants may need a higher level of care or rehab that they cannot get into their own homes. In both cases, the person may lose their housing while trying to seek the services that they need to stay healthy and housed. A good example of this for me happened in November of 2020. One of our participants fell on the ice and ended up needing intensive medical care and rehab. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks and unable to live independently for a month after his hospital discharge. Thankfully, there was COVID-19 waivers in place at the time, and that allowed him to be away from his unit so he was able to focus on his rehab and not worry that he would be homeless when discharged. So I have some wonderful people that I serve, and here's a couple stories. Sean was homeless for over 15 years. While homeless, he struggled with feeling of being worthless, lonely, and hopeless. When he moved in, the housing supports program was able to provide the necessary items so that he could eat, sleep, and bathe comfortably in his new home. He said this was the most welcome he had ever felt, and he was able to work with his mental health and able to work on and off throughout the year that he was in the apartment. In January, something happened, and he lost his apartment. However, during this terrible time, he states that he never gave up hope like he had in the past. In fact, he uses my new favorite phrase, he actively practiced hope. He continued to work with a supplemental service provider, and together they were able to find another apartment. Anthony became homeless for the first time at the age of 43, the day he walked out of jail after doing 1 year for his first and only felony. He had lost everything. He wanted to start a new life, but had a difficult time finding a job and was staying in shelters on and off. Depression and anxiety set in, and he started to drink heavily. That became his life for the next 10 years. He states his pride got in the way for ever asking help, but then one day he did ask for help, and he was able to move into Gateway Gardens using housing supports. It was a difficult at first for him because he is not used to being in a home environment for the last 10 years. But with the help of his housing case manager, food support, hygiene, and cleaning supplies, he began to feel like a real person. He still struggles with alcohol from time to time, but he has made a lot of progress. He's currently looking for a full-time job that will allow him to pay his way again and take care of his responsibilities. He now has a fresh start on life. So thank you very much for hearing my testimony. I hope that the information I provided highlights why this bill is so important. If you have any questions about housing supports program, I would be happy to answer. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kotz. And it looks like we have a third testifier, Lorna Schmidt, that is here to answer questions. Representative Purr, any other comments before we open it up to questions from members?
We are here and ready to answer any questions.
Excellent. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr. I mean, this is a really important program that Minnesota does, and I believe we use only state dollars for this program because MA does not support housing. So this is something that I would say is probably special about living in Minnesota. I'm guessing that a lot of states don't do this at all. I don't know what they do without this program, but couple questions that I have. One is about the absence days. So how hard is it, you know, say someone does, you know, they become ill, they lose their benefit. How difficult is it to get back on the program when they get out of their other situation, when they get out of the hospital or the rehab or whatever? Is this a difficult program to apply for and get onto the program?
I would like to answer that question, either Ms. Coates, Ms. McNeil, or Ms. Erlorna Schmidt.
I can, if you'd like.
Sure, go ahead, Ms. Coates.
It's not necessarily the applying for the program again, it's whether the apartment will be there after we not be able to pay for the rent while they're gone.
Okay, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. So, okay, well, that makes sense. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And then the other question I have, and just maybe the chair can kind of clarify for me. I assume we don't have a fiscal note on this yet, but we have one coming.
We do not yet have a fiscal note. I don't know if Representative Herr has an estimate of the cost for this appropriation. Representative Herr?
Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Liebling. Appreciate the question. We do not have it. One has been requested. And at this time, I do not have an estimate. I do have some numbers, but because the way this program works is it wraps up into a larger number, into a larger program, that it's kind of hard to parse out the numbers, which is why we're waiting for the fiscal note. I don't know if maybe one of my other testifiers, Ms. Lorna Schmidt, can add anything to that.
Ms. Schmidt?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Thank you for the question. Yes, we are working with the department and partners right now to secure a fiscal note for this. So we don't have an exact number, but what we can say is, you know, the larger numbers that have been discussed as part of housing support and, you know, the budget narratives that the governor's office and others have put out have looked often at housing support as a whole. And this bill, you know, really is focused on those community living settings that Representative Herr and our testifiers spoke to. So with this, we are looking at one very specific component of housing support and not the broader program or some of the other settings that people might be served in.
All right. Well, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Chair Liebling.
Thank you. And thank you for that clarification. And, you know, the reason I'm asking is because I'm aware that this could be very, very expensive. And so you're obviously aware of that, and you've tried to tailor this to where the need is. I appreciate that. And, you know, I hope it's something that we can do, because I know this is a really important program. And as I said, it's a very special program. You know, in Minnesota, we do better than a lot of other places. And I think Minnesotans on the whole are very proud that we do. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. As soon as we have a fiscal note, we will send it out to committee members, and it will be reflected if this is included in our omnibus bill. Any other questions for members? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Herr, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'm a co-author on the bill. And the reasoning why I think this is so important, and I think Representative Liebling touched on it, by no fault of their own, if a person who is already disabled needs medical care or has a comorbidity and suffers from any number of myriad of issues, I don't think that we need to pile on any more penalty while they seek treatment. And as it has been said, to know and be comforted, or at least in the back of their mind, know that they can return to shelter after they complete their treatment. We are better by serving those people in this capacity. And so I just want to thank Representative Herr for championing this cause, and I urge all members to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Any other questions from members? Okay, Representative Herr, any closing comments?
Madam Chair, I just want to say thank you to you and the committee for allowing me to present House File 601. This is a much needed change to a program that is crucial, as Representative Albright talked about, in keeping some of our most vulnerable community members in secure and stable housing. And so I just ask for your support, and I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Herr, and thank you to our testifiers for joining us in the evening. We really appreciate it. So with that, members, I'm going to lay this bill over, House File 601, as amended, to be included in our Human Services Finance Omnibus Bill. So with that, members, we do have a committee hearing tomorrow, so I will see everyone at 10:30. And with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you, members.